twite is basically one of your most common garden birds. Come on. Who has that?
I can probably say that I'm the only person in the United Kingdom that has got several hundred twite in his garden.
Hello, and welcome to Wildest Guys Podcast. My name's Nick Patel. I'm a birder, a conservationist, a person of colour with a big passion for passerines. This is the place where we talk birds, wildlife, and all the hard-hitting conservation topics on the top of everyone's minds right now. This week, we'll be talking to David Dinsley, a Northumbrian turned Western Islander. David is a coastal habitat manager, warden in the Owe Peninsula, a majestic headland reserve on the Scottish Isle of Islay. Stick with us as we discuss island conservation, hardships of living in the elements, and some of his incredible wildlife photography. Plus, I may have stuck a cheeky quiz in there midway to test David on some of his Insta posts. And here's your reminder to stick till the end for your weekly dose of Nature Notes of the Week, where I divulge the latest and greatest up-to-date seasonal wildlife to be on the lookout for during this week. Next week's going to be a big one. We're talking to the incredible Farm Ed. Not only that, we'll be speaking to one of the founders, Ian Wilkinson. Ian is an absolute icon and leader for all things regenerative farming, so you're not going to want to miss out on this one. Right, without further ado, let's get into it. One, two, three, four! Okay, so hello, David.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, just getting over the unexpected cold weather and but enjoying it. It's been nice all the same.
Yeah, nice to have some January weather.
Yeah, some proper Christmas weather just a few weeks too late. Because we had a nice cold snap just before Christmas and we're thinking, oh, this is going to be it. We're going to have a white Christmas on Islay. And then obviously it didn't happen. It completely just changed back to rain, wind.
Wet, mud, yeah.
Yeah.
So amazing to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. Mm-hmm. So when I think of yourself, I think of several things. A warden, a photographer, a lover of the outdoors, someone from the Northeast. But please, for our listeners, in just a few words, how would you describe yourself?
I guess you've covered most of them there. That would shortchange you, wouldn't it, if I said that to you? But I guess,
yeah.
For me, it's I guess I'm a Northumbrian living in Scotland who has a passion for nature and conservation and has done since childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty to the point. Perfect.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, I say all those different things, but you are a man of many tricks, obviously, because just going through your Instagram, there's so much you've got going on. I don't know how you fit it all in. So you're living and working out on the Inner Hebrides, on the Owe, is that right?
It's the Owe. So I made that mistake as well. Looking to apply for the job. I'd seen the job advert come up and I was like, it's a job going in Scotland. It's got golden eagles and it's on an island. Yeah. It's called the Owe. What's the Owe? But it's not. Yeah. Some people think it's the OA, some people think it's the OA, some people think it's short for something. It's not, it's just the O. Oh. Just O, yo.
How did that come about?
What, this job?
Yeah, how did you end up in such a... I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people would look at your job, look at what they see of your job, and think, idyllic, you know, that is the dream job. How did it come about?
So, I was working in conservation before anyway, and I was after something. I was working in a suburban nature reserve for the Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust in Washington, and I was looking for a more wild landscape, a bit more of a rugged place to work, potentially somewhere that had livestock, so I could develop that skill or at least get a taste of it.
Yeah,
and I always fancied Scotland. Scotland was always the appeal. I'd always fancied Mull because it was somewhere I'd been more often, or the Highlands. But then this job came up unexpectedly that I seen, like I said, on the O, on Islay. And it just read as like a dream job, just the species that were mentioned in the job advert and what the work entailed and what it was all about. It struck a chord with me And I thought, I've got to get some of this. So I got the interview and stuff, and then eventually got the job. And yeah, it's just amazing. It's like everything I kind of, I don't want it to sound like a humble brag. It's not intended that way. It isn't. But for many years, I did, before conservation, I was doing jobs that were really just filler jobs. There was no passion involved. They weren't for me. Yeah. So to be able to say that I kind of got to a point that I always thought I wanted to get to, but never knew how to get there, to actually be there now, it was pretty special. I just fancied changing my career. I wanted to escalate it a bit and just be somewhere different, and here I am.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, anyone who looks for your Instagram can basically see it looks amazing for a place, for its wildlife, for the whole landscape. What sort of habitats and stuff are we talking on the reserve? Are we talking pretty coastal? You know, is there a big variation of habitats, or is it mainly made up of a few?
Yeah, so the edge of the reserve is coastline, so that does factor in. But I mean, the reserve's big. It's 2,100 hectares, and that's comprised up of lochs, coastal heath, moorland, peatland, wet pasture, grazed ground, arable bird crops, moorland. So it's a real mix of like different Scottish habitats. The only thing we don't really have is like woodland or forest. We've got low lying scrub, but it's minimal. It's a lot of like ead willow, and a bit of rowan. We haven't got many trees, but it's a really nice mix.
Is that just because of how exposed it is?
Yeah, there's no mature. Well, there's one. I'll tell a lie. There's one mature oak tree, which is like an outlier. Yeah. Which is in one of the glens surrounded by like really small ruins and things like that. And it's just this one outlying tree, but it's very exposed. So there isn't a chance for a lot of like vegetation to get much height. Certainly not trees.
Yeah. And it's at the bottom of Isla, is it?
Yeah, it's the Eau Reserve, but it's what we're called Mullavo, which is the southwestern peninsula of the island. It looks like a miniature version of Spain, I think, if you look on a map and you look at it. And the reserve is pretty much half of the Mullavo. So it's a substantial reserve. It's a decent size. And the majority of the visiting public that do come here, they'll do the Monument Trail, or they might do a little bit of the coast. But they're really just scratching the surface on the entirety. There's a lot of, I don't want to say too much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hidden gems that so many people just never see. You know, there's loads here.
And if someone was to, you know, read a summary of the O, what sort of wildlife highlights are we talking? What might people expect on a day-to-day as a generic sort of O visit?
So, yeah, I guess your general species would be golden eagle, twite, hen harrier, a bit more seasonal, but Greenland white-fronted goose or geese, barnacle geese.
Yeah.
Otters. Quite hard to find otters here, but they are here. Red deer. And then you've got cool stuff like marsh fritillaries and narrow-bordered bee hornets as well.
So pretty rubbish then.
Pretty crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, good. I mean,
but at the same time, you know, you've got these amazing species, but I do kind of get the feeling that it's not a landscape for the faint-hearted.
No, it is quite wild the majority of the time. You know, the weather can really take you by surprise. It can be very changeable. Like even in April time, you can have hail showers and then sun and then intense hail. And like I said before, the winters tend to be wet and wild. Like last summer was terrible. There was hardly any sunny days. It was so limited. It was a really fun summer. Yeah. So the weather just comes in straight off the Atlantic, and we're like one of its first port of call, and it just wallops with.
Wow.
So yeah, sometimes it can be really wild. It's quite epic. Yeah. The waves crashing against the coast, but it's wild. But on a sunny day, it's like being abroad. You know, the seas are beautiful. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. And how does it factor in, you know, living there? Is it pretty tough living there as well?
It's certainly not for everybody. And I imagine there's probably a lot of people out there that think, oh, I'd love to live where you live. But and people have said it. But when it actually comes to it, I think it would be a struggle for a lot of people because the island gets so quiet, especially during the winter months and when the weather isn't very isn't very nice. It's hard to switch off, you know, because I live in the farmhouse in the middle of the reserve. I'm naturally into nature anyway, so I'm always looking out the windows. I can't help it. I'm like, it's like looking at a fish tank. I'm just always looking. But it is quite difficult, I think, for some people. But I mean, we do still have, you've still got your mod cons and things. You know, the village is 6 miles away, and you can get stuff. I'm not living in a or something like that, but it is, it suits us, certainly.
And you're obviously you and your partner are pretty okay with the remoteness and stuff like that.
I mean, it's sometimes nice to take a break and get off Isla and get back to the northeast and see family and that, or just go elsewhere on holiday or whatever. But then you come back and you're like, ah, okay, I get it now. Because you come back home, it's like going on holiday. You forget that when you don't leave the island for, you know, a few months. So when you come back, it's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Get away from people. But obviously it's a pretty big far cry from Northumberland. And are you from Newcastle originally or from around there?
From around there, kind of all over Northumberland, to be
Right.
honest. As a family, we just kind of ended up just moving to different spots. But I'd say more Northumberland than like Newcastle way, but yeah.
I mean, looking at some of the work you've done, with parts of the Northumberland in terms of photography stuff, you're obviously still very passionate about Northumberland.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, it is a very special place. It holds many memories. There's a lot of incredible species there. You know, it's brilliant for bird migration if you're into that sort of thing. It is my, like, you know, this is my home, but, you know, I guess that's, if you want to get, you know, romantic about it, that's my spiritual home. I do love the place, so it's nice to go back. I just feel like when I go back, I never have enough time to do everything I want to do. But, you know, I love it. I love the Farne Islands, the
Brilliant.
people.
It's an amazing place. I mean, I'd spent a year there, and I mean, some of the places that you love yourself, places like the Cheviots, absolutely incredible. And the goats. I mean, you've got some amazing pictures of the goats, but just there's something about the goats on the Cheviots and the wild cattle. Just they're just, so cool.
I've still never seen the wild cattle.
So where we were living, we could actually see them from the back garden.
Did
So,
you?
people pay money to go in and we could just see them. But it's so cool, so old. And it's that sort of history which really ties you to the land, I suppose.
That's it is really special, and the goats are really cool as well. Obviously, it was good to go up and photograph them. Obviously, we have feral goats here in Islay, so it felt like a bit of a Christmas holiday going back to Northumberland to photograph those goats. But it was brilliant. It was a good day, and yeah, they are pretty enigmatic. I do like a
And you said at the start about how this role sort of ties in a little bit of farm work. Is that something you want to go more towards, or is it just something you wanted to tie in with the conservation?
It's something that I like linking in with the conservation. You know, obviously we have the conservation grazing here for the likes of chough. So it's very beneficial to the reserve. I should have said chough earlier, actually, when you asked me what the goat, I've dropped the clanger there, right? Because that's the reason we have SSSI status is chough. So that's a reason.
Right.
Before golden,
Brilliant.
before twite, chough. Anyway, the farming stuff, yeah. I don't know if I'd go into crofting, that kind of thing, a lot, but I do enjoy that side of things. It's quite a rewarding side of the job, and it's quite interesting to me working with the sheep and the that'll, yeah, it's different. It's what I wanted to, you know, a taste of. So I'm getting that, and it's nice, yeah.
Brilliant. So take us through some of the work that's going on the reserve at the moment.
So at the minute, we are improving habitat for corncrake on the reserve. We do get them, not every single year. And what that entails is improving the areas of what we call early cover for the corncrakes coming back in around April time. So we basically spread out natural fertilizer, i.e., rotten silage and dung, cattle dung, plant nettles into it, yellow flag iris, to create these nettle beds, generally nettle beds because they take the best out here. Provide these birds. You know, I've traveled all the way from Africa, somewhere to drop into and begin breeding. And we call it early cover because nettles and the species that we work with and we plant, they are first grown species that are suitable for them
Right.
in the springtime. So there's a lot of that going on. We also, there's the general sort of stuff like repairing fences, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We are working on wader scrapes. We're increasing the amount of wader scrapes on site.
Brilliant.
That's curlew and lapwing and snipe and all that kind of thing.
Right. For breeding waders. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to give them more options. We have a few, most of the waders breed around Kinnibus here. And there is a lock, and we do get species breeding on the lock, like every now and again, Dunlin, oyster catcher, common sandpiper. But there is habitat for lapwing and curlew, that which they do use.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
Just putting these scrapes in to improve the habitat for them to forage and feed, as well as other waterfowl and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the corncrake work, it's so funny because it sounds so counterintuitive. You know, so many reserves across country are like, you know, get rid of the nettles. And they're obviously somewhere that the corncrake thrive. Why is that? Why are nettles particularly good for that?
So if a nettle bed grows, or a clump of nettles or whatever, if they grow right and the vegetation isn't thatched, they grow very, very tall, and they're quite airy. So corncrakes are quite, like a lot of declining species, are quite picky. And they like to be able to move freely through this tall, herby vegetation. And nettles fit the bill. It's also full of like caterpillars and things that they prey upon.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the first grown ones back, like in the spring. So it's inviting to them. But it's tall, it's light, it's airy, so it fits their requirements.
Brilliant. It's just amazing. That is such a niche habitat, really, isn't it? You know, that is incredible. Just on the tip of Isla, nettles thriving to help, you know, this species. And how annoying of, you know, declining species to be so picky.
I know, it's not right, is it? that's what takes like the majority of, I guess, the late autumn and winter time for me, is just transplanting nettles from elsewhere in the reserve into places that want them. More adapted or suitable for corncrake, and meat spreading, cattle dung, and kneeling down in that and planting them in it. And
the prettier parts of the job. So is there certain like goals and ambitions you have for the job, you know, things that you want to achieve, things that you'd like to see on the reserve, you know, flourishing more than others, or, you know, even getting things in that haven't been there before?
Yeah, for me, I just want to be the best I can in the job I'm doing, and like I said, improve the habitat for corncrake, try and get corncrake in. It would be amazing to get white-tailed eagles breeding on the reserve. There's nothing that we can really do to make that happen. It's kind of on them. But with the population of white-tailed eagles, you know, growing and growing, I think it's only a matter of time. And then I guess with the waders, for me, it's just trying to get, you know, we've lost lapwing for the past 2 years or so. It'd be nice to get them back and have them successfully breeding. They're not a priority species or a key species for the reserve. Because there's very limited habitat that is actually suitable for lapwing.
Yeah.
But it would just be nice to have them back, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Going to the eagles, some of your stories and posts about having breakfast and white-tailed eagles going over, where that's ridiculous, you know.
It's insane. It is insane.
Garden bird.
And you do, I'm still not fully used to it. Because it's insane. Like, I was on the court today, and there was two white-tailed eagles like flying past, and they're not very far away, and you just think they're massive, and they're right there. And I'm just
incredible.
I'm still looking at them as I'm driving the quad. I'm not like blasé.
Yeah.
No, it's like, if they're about,
I mean, that's some of the best wildlife is like that, though, isn't it? You know, you just never ever get tired of them. And raptors are class. So completely jealous of that. And I'm not surprised. You never get used to that. How is, you know, going back to the island and living so far from where you come from, how does that factor in with like family and stuff? Do you sort of regularly go back? Do you miss family living out there and stuff like that?
Yeah, I do miss family. I mean, certainly some of the time. I'm one of these funny people that I'm very happy and content in my own company.
Yeah.
But I quite like that there be people nearby. Don't
I'm
want
the
to be
same, yeah.
like solely by myself, but I'm happy to be just off, but know they're nearby.
Yeah.
Your granddad's not been in the best of health over the past,
Oh.
I guess, the past year, maybe just
Yeah.
a month. So being so far away from that isn't great. I don't like that so much because it's not, whichever way you get back to the northeast from here, it isn't quick. We're not
Yeah.
particularly far away, we're not like, it's not like Shetland or anything, but because of the route you've got to take,
Yeah,
the
lots
way to
of,
get back.
I suppose you've got to go, you have to get a ferry, do you? Ferry across
Yeah,
to
that's 2
Oban, is
hours.
it? Right. Yeah, so it's a lot of like changes and things, isn't it? Yeah. That's hard. That is hard. And people, again, we're going back to what you were saying about people thinking it's the dream, to live out there. And there's loads of factors which, make it ju probably just as hard as it is amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is other things you have to factor in. Power cuts do happen. I know they happen elsewhere, but power cuts do happen here.
Yeah.
The food's more expensive because you're on a Scottish island. You've only got the
Right.
cooperative, really. I mean, there is butchers and as well, but so the food's
Yeah.
priced a bit high. The fuel's a bit more expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, the positives probably outweigh the negatives, but yeah, it is, as much as it is the dream, there are snags
Yeah.
that you have to be realistic about.
Yeah.
Such as family, and should anything happen,
Yeah,
I'm not.
yeah.
It takes us a day to get back. Essentially, it's got the ferry terminals, and you've driven, you've had a
Yeah.
stop of fuel, whatever. You're essentially looking at like six, well, longer,
Yeah.
8 hours or so.
That's incredible. I remember seeing a picture of on Instagram. You were, well, it was a few pictures. I was watching you track your progress with the dry stone wall that you were making in the garden. And I was thinking, obviously, it's amazing to be able to build that, but it's probably some pretty good protection from the elements for the house.
Yeah, so like you'll have seen the wall before that blew down.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the wall before that was just, it had no foundations. Whoever put that
Yeah.
in was just breeze blocks put down. We had these 60, 65 miles an hour gusts, and they just
Yeah.
took this wall down, and it hit the deck, and it just all cracked into bits. So I
Yeah.
thought, originally I was just going to build a fence, and I thought, well, that's going to look pretty naff. I'll just build a
Yeah.
fence. So I thought, there's loads of stone at the top of the hill, which is just dumped from an old barn that was taken down. I thought, right, okay,
Yeah.
I'm gonna build a dry stone wall here. So it's gonna be a habitat for wildlife, it's gonna look better,
Yeah.
and I just fancy the challenge. And I did it, and it took however long it took, several weeks, and it's still standing. So
It looks amazing. Are
I've
you a trained dry stone waller?
no,
No.
I've done like a, I think I've done like a tiny induction course,
Yeah. It
barely than
looks
that.
very professional, and it's so in keeping with the environment. So, the smashing. Is there any sort of like lessons that you've grasped from island life that you could, take back to sort of like mainland life? Like, do you think there's things that you've learned, maybe even just about yourself, that being there, maybe you wouldn't have learned on the mainland per se?
Good question.
Because I've always wanted to live on an island. I was very tempted to move to Shetland at one point, and then me and my partner were thinking of moving to near sort of Harris Way. We actually very nearly moved there for her work, but due to hospital access and stuff like that, we just couldn't do it. But I would have loved to. But then I also think, yeah, I don't know if I could, pull it off. But yeah, is there something about island life that you can just only people who live on islands truly know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's going to sound quite basic, but it's just a case of, speaking for myself anyway, it's just be nice. Just, it's a small community. You do anything wrong, everybody's going to know about it by the end of the day. So just be nice, just be kind to people around you, help people out. There's a lovely like sort of community spirit on Isla where people will help other people out. People make people feel very welcome here. If you're just moving here or you're visiting, everybody waves. When everybody drives around the island, everybody waves at each other or raises the finger.
I love that. I remember in Shetland, well, I've been there a few times and everyone's like that. And I just, that's one of the things which drew me initially to the idea of living on an island, just because everyone's so friendly. But it's funny now you've said it. Maybe it's just because everyone's so friendly. Otherwise, if you're not friendly, they'll remember you as the unfriendly person.
They do. They do. It's yeah, it's just a case of just, like I say, it's a small community, so it's just respecting people and getting to know people, and
Yeah.
you see
Helping
people
others and
helping others. Yeah, no,
yeah.
it's really nice. Yeah.
That's cool. And what's your sort of like favorite part, either of the reserve or of the island? Do you have a favorite part that you just enjoy going to for you?
Yeah, there's a on the north end of the island, there's an area just above Loch Grunya, which is another RSPB reserve,
Yeah.
called Ardnaive Point. And
Okay.
it's a fantastic spot for chough, for rock pooling, wading birds, little tern. You sometimes get points up there. Otters and seals. It's and the water's beautiful on a nice day. You can see across the Mull and Colonsay and Arrernsay.
Yeah.
On the reserve itself, I guess it's got to be the coast, really. There's bits
Yeah.
of the coast that nobody sees, and you just think this is special. But there's no paths and stuff, so like you've really got to
Yeah,
ramble.
yeah.
It's amazing.
Brilliant. That's amazing. And what's your favorite habitat? Like, do you enjoy the habitats on the reserve, or like,
I guess
are these the sort of habitats you love or did love before you came there? Like, are these your favorite sort of habitats?
always enjoyed like mystery of like a moorland, like an enigmatic
Yeah.
wild moorland.
Yeah.
But in terms of my favorite habitat is probably woodland,
Right.
which is not what I don't have a woodland here, so that makes
Well, I
no
was just
sense.
thinking, because Washington's wetlands, isn't it?
It is, but it's quite wooded as well.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of wetland there. There's a lot of woodland too, and I really enjoy like the woodland management side of things,
Yeah.
coppicing, doing work for willow tits and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
I really do enjoy like woodland habitats. Just being in a woodland, there's different
Yeah.
types. It's quite special. But
Yeah.
then the coast, the coast is always changing, and I really like that.
That's cool. So you don't have any of the sort of Atlantic rainforesty type woodlands?
Yeah, we do, but not in the
You
reserve.
do?
Yeah, they're on like the
Right.
south of Islay has some of
Okay.
that, just a little bit. So you get like your tree lungwort and that kind of thing. And there's not too many like woodlands like that on Islay because it's so flat.
Yeah.
Apart from like there's areas where there's hills, but a lot of it's quite flat and a lot of it's peatland and moorland. But we do have a bit of that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to touch on, because it's quite an important topic for me. You've got a dog.
Yeah.
Is bringing that dog up in nature quite an important thing for you? You know, that sort of interaction with nature and being a responsible dog owner, etc.
Absolutely, Hamish is pretty well trained, so he's generally by my side. I don't let him chase things.
Yeah.
He's off the lead a lot of the time here, but I'm fully aware of what's going on around here, so I don't
Yeah.
let him like areas where there's breeding waders or he's going to disturb something.
Yeah.
I only take him out on specific like jobs I'm doing. I won't take
Yeah,
him out
yeah.
on 99% of the breeding bird surveys because of disturbance. There's like the odd one I can bring him on where I know he's going to be all
Yeah.
right. It's generally if I'm doing a bit of like physical work, he's going to be near us. So if I'm doing concrete
Yeah.
work,
Like
like
infrastructure stuff and
infrastructure, bricks and fences, he can be there.
yeah.
I don't just take him all the time. And I
Yeah.
do think it's important, especially with having livestock as well, about responsible dog owners. We have had issues here where we've lost sheep because of dogs.
Right.
Because everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people will say, my dog wouldn't do that. Well, it just did that.
Yeah,
So
it's just a
didn't
natural
swim
thing,
away.
really, isn't it?
Yeah, they can't
I
help.
mean, I don't know if you get many visitors, but I know from personal experience working in conservation and, you know, showing the public that you have a dog can make a real difference, because then they see you less of the bad guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, sort of, they sort of, they'll listen to you more because they know that you understand their side of it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have, signs. You don't want to have too many, don't do this, don't do that signs on us. But we have a few, just enough that do say, keep your dog on a lead. And especially
Yeah.
at certain times of the year, if they're walking through where there's cows and cattle or sheep and lambs, you do try. And if you see someone, you tell them. And
Yeah.
inevitably, it depends how you approach the situation, I guess, but inevitably, a lot of the time, you are the bad guy. Doesn't matter what you do. You're the bad guy. You're telling them how to,
yeah.
You're telling them how to, you know, be with their dog and stuff, and they think you're being melodramatic, but you just,
yeah.
just try and do it in a tactical way where you'll tell them why, you know, it's in a nice manner, and hopefully the message gets through. And yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know
yeah.
an issue dogs are and can be for wildlife, you know, for like wading birds, especially that kind of thing.
Mm.
It is a concern, especially with, we are a nation of them, same as, you know, cats.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I always have at the back of my mind is it a problem if one dog runs into a meadow? Probably not massively, but it's the fact that it's replicated millions of times because there are so many, and particularly in those areas where they are, it's really dense, or, you know, where things are sensitive. But what is the visitor sort of stuff like? Because surely going from somewhere like Washington, where it's filled full of visitors, to somewhere which probably doesn't have many visitors?
Well, we get quite a few in the summer, I guess, because what you have with us here is we have no facilities for visitors here. We don't have toilets. We don't have a visitor centre or anything like that. We've just got the car park and some information.
Yeah.
Whereas up the road at Loch Grinyer, they have a visitor centre. They've got toilets, hides. We don't have any hides. Mm. But we do get a lot of visitors. We appeal to several different niches, bird watchers, locals, tourists. We have the history with the shipwrecks off the reserve, the American Monument. There is geological, some interesting geological aspects to Isla. And especially down here where you can see like fool's gold or certain types of stone and things. It's quite geologically special.
Yeah.
And then you've got people that just want to walk along clifftops and just have a look at the view. And so we don't just tick the bird watching box, we tick several boxes. So you get a different assortment of people that want to come here for different reasons.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I suppose it must be quite rewarding then to sort of, when you do come across visitors, to be educating people who may not be into nature at all, and then flipping that switch, and you know, they could take home with them a multitude of things, including a fascination for nature.
Absolutely, yeah, it's nice. I mean, we do the guided walks here from April to October, and they generally last about two and a half hours, and you build up a rapport with most people that you take on these walks. They're all on the walk for a reason. They're interested.
Yeah,
and you find that you can really get into some good conversations with people, and you end up talking about, you know, they always ask why I'm here, what I'm doing, what led me to this, and then you find out a bit about them, or you'll just bump into people randomly. Like there was a guy living out of his van, and he was parked up in the car park last year for a few days, and I was just checking, I was topping the bird feeders up in the car park and checking the pond. It was a new pond at that point.
Yeah.
And I ended up chatting with this guy for, must have been about 45 minutes, and we just had a really good conversation, and I just enjoy those moments where you do just interact with the public. And some people don't want to talk. I never force it. Sometimes I don't want to talk. But when you do get a rapport with people, educate them, you can, they'll ask what bird's that, say it's a twite or whatever. And you just unlock some things within them, and it's good fun.
Brilliant.
And
that's amazing. It's interesting you say about twite.
Yeah.
I mean, twite is basically one of your most common garden birds. Come on. Who has that?
I can probably say that I'm the only person in the United Kingdom that has got several hundred twite in his garden. It's
that
crazy.
Insane.
It's amazing. It is amazing. I mean, the beautiful sound all through the winter, and we still have several pairs that breed on the reserve in the summer, but they're amazing little birds, and
you never start to take them for granted.
No, well, maybe with the twite a little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
That's fair. You know, if robins were rare, then yeah. Right. So going on from sort of like the conservation side of it, I'm presuming one of your big passions is photography. I mean, your Instagram is immense, and I would probably say one of the most, I would recommend it the most, of at least in the top three photography accounts to share to someone looking at wildlife photography, because the quality is insane. But it's not necessarily a big random mix of things. You know, you've definitely got a theme and a style. You do take some landscape pictures, but there's a lot of wildlife portrait, would you say? Is that something you're big into?
Yeah, I guess I do definitely have a style. Thanks for the praise, by the way. I appreciate that. It's very kind. I don't know. I don't know how to explain my style, really. I mean, it just sort of, when I'm pointing the camera at my subject, I'm 9 times out of 10, I'm trying to see the finished shot as I'm looking at it, if that makes sense. I don't just like to just kind of lift the camera and just like, right, let's go, let's just take loads of shots with no purpose. A lot of the
You've got an
time
agenda,
I've got an agenda, I've got an idea in my mind. I'm kind of inspired by, not all the time, but I'm quite inspired by like old bird books and things like that, and like that kind of not style but aesthetic. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of like using too much light. Like people like to have silhouettes and things, and
I mean, I'd look at your pictures and say that they're very, it's not simple. That's not what I'm looking for, but it's very to the point. It's that shot of that particular wildlife, and it does what it says on the tin. You know, it's, there's nothing fancy as a compliment. You know, if you want to see a picture of a meadow pipit, there it is. You know, a cuckoo, there it is, and it's just like they're doing what a cuckoo should do, and it's that's one of the things I love about it.
No, I love photography. I do really enjoy it. It has become a real passion. It did start off as more of a hobby, but I've been fortunate enough to get commissioned work through it. Which I really appreciate and don't take for granted. It's a nice form of escapism, I think, photography. Just, in that moment when you're photographing something or just being out with the camera, and
Do you always take your camera with you, like wherever you're going?
pretty much it's kind of become like a third arm or something at this point. And then
I bet
having one
it
is
must
like,
be horrible not to, though, because you know, if you see something and you've only got your phone, like that must be terrible.
that happens quite a lot, and that's the problem though, because then like you're in them situations and you think, I've got my camera, so you're always thinking about the camera when you haven't got the camera. Do you know what I mean? It becomes almost like a burden at some point, but
Definitely.
nature of the game, I think.
You know, you must see some pretty cool stuff every day that you just think, oh, I'm spoiled for choice of stuff to photograph. The variety of stuff that you post, it's incredible. You know, bird life, sea life, the breeding birds, raptors, owls. What's like the things that you gravitate towards the most? Is it like the birds of prey or owls and things like
Yeah, it tends to be sort of those enigmatic species, but
that?
I like to photograph things that are a bit more obscure as well. Certainly, I know that species such as puffins and things like that, barn owls, do really nicely on social media. People lap that stuff. Then, I really like sharing photos and images of species that aren't so sort of hailed. Whether it is like corncrake or water rail or the twite or purple heron, just these more obscure species that aren't at the forefront, just a range to it all. I like them species that are kind of the underdog a bit.
And I suppose, you know, a lot of your followers who do love those sort of puffins and barn owls and stuff will then learn a lot more when you do post the more obscure stuff. Things like hen harriers, you know. I don't think I've seen as good pictures of your pictures of hen harriers. It's just insane. And again, you know, something you've seen from the house.
I see them from the living room window, man. It's crazy.
That is jealous. Yeah, jealous.
And you'll see them like throughout the year. There are species that they breed on the reserve, but then there's different birds in the winter, and they're here most of the time. Yeah.
Do you have a garden list?
I don't have a garden list, but I probably should have. There's some pretty cool things on there.
What's the rarest thing you've had?
In the garden? Wryneck.
Yeah, I remember the picture. Yeah, that is
Yeah.
awesome. Yeah.
That was
I mean, you've got to get a rhino there. I mean, not because they're common around there, but when you move to an island, the things you'd want for your garden list, rhino's got to be up there. And what were
absolutely.
you doing? Were you just mooching about or
I was mooching about like I usually do, looking out windows, and I went through the porch, and it's where the dry stone wall is.
Yeah.
Was just looking at the birds on the feeders and stuff, and then looking at the other dry stone wall beyond. I was just, I've just been to Portugal where I'd seen wrynecks, and I've
Yeah.
seen them once before in the UK, and I could just see this bird on the wall, and I thought that looks different, so I got my bins up and I had a look. I said, bloody hell, it's a wryneck. Said, oh
Wow.
my, I've got to get the camera. So I went and
Yeah.
grabbed the camera, went and told my girlfriend, went back,
Yeah.
it gone, hadn't it? I didn't think to take a photo through my phone, through the scope, looking at it. And then I couldn't find it
Yeah.
again. Gone. I couldn't believe it. I was gutted. I was gutted.
That is those moments when you see something out the window, and regardless of where your camera or whatever is, it
Yeah.
feels like you're in slow motion. You know, you're
It
like,
was.
I can't find my camera, like everything's in the way, you know, it's lost. Or yeah, I remember seeing waxwings when I was growing up in the garden, and I think I was having a brew or something, and I looked out the window. And obviously, I didn't have my binoculars on me. And I remember just thinking, oh, fuck it out. You know, I rather than being happy that they were there, I was
Yeah.
more, my binoculars are way upstairs. And yeah, it's one of those things where you just can't get to them quick enough and you just know they're going to go. They're going to go. There's no chance they're going to
Yeah.
stay.
But you had the black red star, didn't you?
Yeah. So where we've just moved to now, 2 days in, we have black red star in the garden. And yeah, we've not had too much recently. We've had lots of thrushes, lots of fieldfares and redwings. To be honest, where we lived, not the last place, but the place before that, we did pretty well. We had red star in the garden, yellow wagtails just behind, spotted flycatcher. But I do believe that even people in cities or in the most random places, you know, anything can pass through, and it's just about keeping your eye out. And that's the great thing about a bird, though, isn't it? You never know what you're going
You
to
don't.
get. Speaking of cool birds, you managed to catch up with some waxwings
I did.
over
That
Christmas. Yeah.
was quite an experience. So I wanted to see, I hadn't seen waxwings for several years. The last ones I seen were, I think it was a flock of 30 odd. So I was out at North Shields Fish Key. There was an
Yeah.
Iceland gull there and a Glaucus gull. And I was went down to see them and photographed them.
Yeah.
And I heard these waxwings in the flow over the top. So I hadn't seen any.
Oh.
So I was like, right, we're back in the northeast. There's been a
Yeah.
somewhat of an invasion going on.
Yeah.
Some just up the road. Let's go and have a look.
Yeah.
Went to see them, eventually found them. It was that typical thing with waxwings where they pick a really busy area right next to a
Yeah.
road. They were in the
Yeah.
grounds of the care home. There was people driving in and out. There was loads of photographers there. Got some photos, enjoyed the moment, and then I was like, I think we're done.
I think it's time to go.
I think it's
Yeah.
we've done a
You've
bit.
had
And
enough
basically,
people shouting stuff, and you know,
that's exactly what happened.
it's incredibly hard urban birding sometimes, isn't it? It's surprisingly difficult. I just find it incredibly weird that, you know, someone with the most obscure hobby could be happily doing that down the road and no one would notice. But when birders turn up, it's like, right, let's get him.
Yeah. We'll make them pay what they're up
Yeah.
to. Yeah. Now, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of tooting and stuff as people drove past and shouting stuff
Yeah.
out the windows. And yeah, that was took some photos, enjoyed them, and then checked out. That was it.
Yeah. It's a shame because, like you say, because it's been a few years since a decent waxwing winter. And then this year was warming up to be one. And then it's just sort of fizzled out now. But they're incredible birds. You know, you never forget them, do you?
No, they're beautiful. I remember seeing them for the first time when I lived in the Tyne Valley. I lived in a village called Holtsel, and there was some in the neighbour's garden. She had a fruit tree. I can't remember what type of fruit tree it was. And it was just covered in these birds. And I was like, what are they? They
Yeah.
look bizarre.
Yeah, so
They're
strange.
waxwings.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Right. Just as sort of like a break between the questions, I'm going to try something. It's a bit of a quiz. Obviously, it's just we're just on sound here, so it's going to be by description. And basically, I've taken a few snapshots from your Instagram,
Okay.
and basically, I'm going to read out a description, and you have to say what post it was, what bird it was, what post it was. Okay?
Okay. Okay, let's do it.
Right, there's a few. Okay. So, a new species at the Garden Hide set up the other day. It's been another great year for breeding. Duh, duh,
Whinger.
duh. On the, yep. Yeah. Correct. That was easy. How did that?
Good guess.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's a beautiful picture, a
Yeah.
juvenile. And
It's just, yeah,
yeah.
random. It just popped up there. The breed is in the garden. I mean, there was as well to them. There was a pair in the bottom of the garden. It must have been a second brood, I think, later on. And then this, yeah, they weren't using those sticks literally by the feeders. And then there's one just popped up,
Yeah.
and it's nice to see. Love, I love
I
wind
mean
chimes.
the adult males are
Yeah.
fabulous,
Very
awesome
much.
birds. Okay, next one. A true West Coast delight. These
Ooh.
small seabirds will soon be taken to Scottish harbours and coastal cliffs to nest
I
and rear
see.
their chicks. Yeah. Maybe this is too easy. Okay, this one's next one's a bit harder. Okay, this one's definitely very easy. I even if I just say the grey ghost.
I'll be hen Harry Emil.
Yeah, male hen harrier. Male hen harriers. I mean, ringtails are beautiful, but male hen harriers are just, they're so different to any other bird of prey. Obviously, apart from some of the other harriers, but yeah, and so stark against like a moorland.
Beautiful and a lot smaller than the female.
Yeah,
Especially when you see
yeah.
them side by side. Yeah, stunning birds, stunning. They always seem to be like 5 steps ahead of you, even if you're hiding. There's been
Yeah,
very few
yeah.
times they've actually come really close, but
Yeah.
I never seen a male. And I worked for the RSPB prior to this, down in the Forest of Bowland, doing hen harrier work, and
Yeah.
I never seen a male hen harrier until I got up here.
What did you think of Lancashire?
I enjoyed Lancashire. There
Because that's
was
where I'm from, and I absolutely love Bowland. But yeah, I have mixed feelings about Lancashire. But yeah, Forest of Bowland's beautiful, isn't it?
it's amazing. Yeah, I tell you what, I did see in the Forest of Bowland,
Yeah.
eagle owl.
Yes. So I saw those ones as well. The ones that had chicks there.
Yeah, well, I think this. I don't think that pair were active when I was down there, but I
Right.
know the ones you're talking about.
Yeah,
So,
yeah.
one of my first, well, the first nest site I was monitoring for hen harrier was stayed on like a small bothy on the hill, and I heard
Yeah.
that distinctive, really deep, like "ooh" sort of sound.
Yeah.
And then one of my last shifts at a
Yeah.
different place where, not long after sunrise, I seen one flying like on the horizon. That was that is a
Wow.
big. That's a massive bird.
Yeah.
It's just this huge owl flying. It's
Yeah.
amazing. You're
That's
sort of, you know, it's one
incredible.
of those situations where you see it, and
Yeah.
then after the fact, you think, was that real? Did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, it did
Yeah.
happen.
Have I just manipulated that in my mind?
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Did-a-da, on a moody October afternoon at Loch Skerrells, you'd think they own the place.
Grey herons.
Yeah. There are quite a few down there.
Yeah, there was that time. I think it's because there was a lot of younger birds about as well.
Yeah.
I think the breed near there too. There's a few
Yeah.
herons on the island.
Herons are just amazing and bizarre in equal measures, you know. They just eat
Heron,
everything.
everything, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen one eating a little grebe before.
Wow,
Yeah,
really?
I was
Wow.
at Washington.
I've
Yeah.
seen one eat a grass snake.
Oh, wow.
I mean, how can you look at something like a little grebe, which is obviously, you know, potentially quite a tasty meal, and then equally look at a grass snake or,
Yeah.
you know, a frog or something?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple more. Subtle, but with a pinch of spice. The didda-da is the rock star of Scottish waterbirds.
Red-throated diver.
Yeah. And an incredible picture.
Thank
But I
you.
mean, they must be pretty regular to see in summer for you. Are they? Or.
You know where to look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I tell you what, they can breed. I mean, obviously they're a Schedule 1 species, but they can breed on the most random small pool in a peatland in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Out here. Or they can, you know, be on a big lock, but they can literally be on like a pond-sized puddle. And there's a pair of them. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, presumably bird. There's quite a few in winter knocking about on the coast.
Yeah, we get all three species. Black-throated diver to a lesser extent, but certainly the Great Northern and Red-throated, like a lot of them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Okay, last one in the quiz. Hunker down. A-da-da-da, taking shelter from the snow flurries on the garden wall earlier this morning.
Ooh.
Stumped.
Maybe.
And then at the end it says, there were several birds hunkering down during the cold snap today.
Did you say it was on the garden wall?
Yep.
In snow flurries?
Yep.
I might be stumped with this one, Nick.
A red wing.
Oh, it was.
I
wouldn't have guessed that ever. I would not have guessed that at all. But yeah.
Well, I got you on one of them. Brilliant. So, I mean, apart from photography and conservation, another obvious theme in your posts is birding. Do you consider yourself a birder nowadays?
Yeah, I consider myself a birder. I don't consider myself a twitcher.
Yeah.
I've done it. Yes, I've done it and I have enjoyed it, but I've never been somebody to twitch. If I have twitched, it's always been to see a bird that I want to see. I won't just race around looking for stuff. I tend to prefer just the idea of being out and just looking for things, you know?
That's one thing I love, is just you go somewhere and you enjoy it for all the aspects of it. And, you know, if you see something amazing, but even just, you know, I'm fascinated by habitats. I can be in a habitat or go to see a certain habitat, and that impresses me just as much as, you know, seeing specific species. So do you get a chance to do sea watching, stuff like that?
Yeah, we do it now and again. This isn't the best place to sea watch because of our position. But myself and the site manager, who's also called David, we'll go out.
Proper conservation name.
Proper conservation, yeah. We'll tend to go out in the autumn a bit and just do some watches and see what we get. It's quite hard because of the elevation of the cliffs to get a good view over the sea. But I do quite enjoy it. It can be a bit thankless at times when it's pouring down. You just sat there with your hood up and wiping the lens all the time. But
you get pretty fruitless. Nice. Yeah. Have you ever seen like any whales or anything off there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen harbor porpoise, bottlenose dolphin.
Brilliant.
Risso's dolphins, and minke whale. I had a minke whale breaching off the reserve last summer, which was amazing.
That's incredible. I mean, going back to what we were saying about birding and what you were saying about visitors and dogs and stuff, you know, it sounds like you're a pretty big advocate for being responsible around wildlife and from a human point of view, you know, people respecting that sort of thing. I know that you are quite into drone photography, but you're also a big advocate for responsible drone photography. You know, it's you don't like seeing, because there's a lot of people out there who, to the disadvantage of wildlife, will go and do all sorts.
Yeah, I see videos on Instagram all the time where people are, very photogenic hotspots or nice locations or whatever, or people are just taking the drone and they're just going through flocks of birds. You think, what are you doing? It's not on. Some people are very aware of it because you read that, you see the posts and people complain. Won't do anything about it. Some people may well be a bit naive to it, to any disturbance, but some definitely don't care. That's probably the broad strokes pointing the finger. But there needs to be more. I think there needs to be more guidance in how you use a drone. I enjoy using mine, but it's few and far between. It's generally for something quite specific.
Yeah.
Like Soldier's Rock or some landmark. Mm-hmm. Just wizard about the place, like a little helicopter. But drone photography is amazing. You know, it's implemented in nature documentaries. But I've seen stuff on telly, Nick, where like they're in Scotland and you can see this like oyster catchers like pipping because obviously the editor hasn't noticed because they don't think it's just an oyster catcher or whatever, just the bird doing its thing. But when you watch it, you're like, oh, that's a bit suspect actually. A bird's obviously not impressed with that.
Yeah. But is wildlife filmography, cinematography, are you into that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I am in the process of like starting to do more stuff about that. I've just done a short piece for the Big Garden Bird Watch.
Yeah.
I like to do more like filmed work. Not necessarily paid work, but just like I want to get
more. Yeah. Because not quite the same, but you do and you're very good at it and it is quite enjoyable, you know, when you do the sort of almost like vlog of the work you're doing. Sort of updates with you on, but showing some of the things that you're doing, that's really interesting. Even more of that, I think people would enjoy stuff like that.
So I used to do a lot more of that kind of thing, and then I got in my own head a little bit too much, I think, and Hannah's, my girlfriend's always pushing us to do that sort of thing more, and I get in my head too much and I think, nah, this is rubbish, well, nobody wants to hear us talk about this, why am I doing this? So I kind of I step back from it, but I'm going to make more of an effort to do that kind of thing now. I just think, I think if I'm going to say something, that's got to kind of, that needs to be, it needs to come with some kind of purpose if it's going to be for people to watch it. But yeah, the whole, I don't know, the whole self-confidence thing, just kind of, the older I get, the more I think, yeah, people don't need to see me doing that, but I'm going to try and do it with a bit more focus now, I think.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. I think definitely the warden stuff, people will be fascinated to know. From doing warden work, I genuinely don't think people know what it involves, really. People just think they turn up at reserves or whatever, and yeah, I don't think they know half of what's going on. So even, you know, stuff like the nettle beds and stuff like that, people definitely find stuff like that fascinating.
I've definitely done lots of videos talking about nettles. People probably think I'm like, well, I think my colleagues and things think I'm nettle obsessed. So,
which I don't bother about corncrakes, just love nettles.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Just a few more questions. And these are pretty basic questions, but let's see how they go. So, favorite places. So, one favorite place in Northumberland for wildlife. And one favorite place on the Inner Hebrides for wildlife.
Favorite place on the Inner Hebrides. How broad strokes are we talking? Like, can I say Islay as a whole, or
no, specific? It has to be somewhere, you know, where you can imagine yourself looking out at something, and there's certain wildlife there that you're after, and it always, you know, always produces.
Well, I'm going to be biased on that front, and for the Inner Hebrides, I'm going to say the O. and then for Northumberland...
Bit of an advertisement.
Come and see us. For Northumberland, it almost feels too easy to say the Farne Islands, but the Farne Islands is really special. I'm going to say Hartope Valley.
Good choice. Yeah.
I really like Hartope Valley. It's a really nice stretch. You get a lot of good species in there. You know, if you're lucky, green woodpeckers and things and common salmon, dipper. Buzzard and ravens. I really enjoy the Cheviots and the Hartope Valley. Yeah.
It's an incredible place. I think whilst the coast is becoming more and more popular around there, I think there's parts of the Cheviots that people just still don't know about, and it's there's some incredible wildlife. Harthope is I've not been in there in summer, but even in winter, you know, it feels so rich in wildlife.
You get your plenty of your wind chat in the summer.
Yeah,
in the bracken, very nice.
Yeah, don't get me started on wind chats. I'll end up talking about red stars and all sorts. So favorite bird.
Favorite bird. Now, okay, this is a good question. Is this like globally?
Both.
Both. Okay, so I don't know if it's no, it probably is my favorite, but it's definitely the bird I want to see the most, and that's the shoebill.
Yeah, good choice, good choice.
On, it's a beast. I mean,
Yeah.
it's an
I mean,
extraordinary bird.
I feel like your photography and the shoebill are just meant to be, really, aren't they? There's something almost about your photography, especially with like eagles and stuff. It really captures the, it's almost like a predatory feel. And you know, like when you take pictures of stags and things, it's quite fierce. And I feel like the shoebill would fit into that perfectly.
I think it would. I think I need to go and see one, don't I?
Yeah.
You give yourself a shoe bill in Africa.
Yeah.
But then, well, here's a question back to you. What do you think my, let's say British or whatever, British species, what do you think my favorite species of British bird is?
Golden Eagle.
It's not. So
It's not.
it's probably quite surprising, actually. It's the green woodpecker.
No.
It is.
A
It's the
green
green woodpecker.
woodpecker.
And that's
I was
because.
looking for your Instagram before, and I did not see a green woodpecker on there.
So the reason behind this is because for the longest time, it was my bogey bird, right? Because in the Northeast, they're not
Yeah.
particularly easy to find. They're really shy. They do a runner, will dance around the tree to get away from you so you can't
Yeah,
see
yeah,
them.
yeah.
Totally different story than if you go down south and they're really common. So that just like ended up this with me getting this fascination to try and find them. And then I managed to find a breeding pair in Durham at this hotspot. And I don't know if it's my favorite bird, but the trouble with me
Yeah.
is it's the same with music. I'll have a favorite band and then it'll
Yeah.
move to something else and you just.
Green woodpecker art's so colorful, and their personality is just brilliant. But it was kind of similar for me, because growing up in Lancashire, you know, we didn't really have many. And it was definitely something I wanted to see more of. And then you go to somewhere like London and you sit on a bench and they're next to you, and it's just crazy. But yeah, that's a really good choice. One that I wouldn't have expected from you, but a very good choice. Yeah.
Careful.
So when I'm driving around or walking around, or if I'm out working somewhere, there's a few species that I'm always on the lookout for. I was saying this the other day. When I'm driving in winter, for some reason, I'm always on the lookout for great grey shrike. I can't stop. But yeah, when you're on the reserve, what is one species which you haven't seen on the reserve yet that you're always thinking, oh, I bet one of these would turn up one day?
It's a big ask, but probably gerfalcon.
That's
It
very specific.
is very specific.
A nice white one.
We do, yes, we do. They have been known every few years. I've been told that we're due one, but I haven't found
Yeah.
one yet.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
You're always just because you get used to the shapes of the hills you see. So you know if there's an eagle sat up there, you get to recognize
Yeah.
these shapes. So if there was this giant falcon sat there, I'd like to think I'd see it. Big ask, massive ask, but
So every
new
time you go
one.
past an eagle, you're like, oh, it's just an eagle.
I'm down.
It's
Every time.
not a gym. Yeah, brilliant. I can sort of see the habitat around you would be pretty good for snowy owl as well.
That
That
would
would.
be a close second, or well, maybe even tied. I think there's the two
Yeah.
birds.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Well, that's all the questions I've got. And I've discovered more about you. And to be honest, even though I thought there was a lot to you initially, there is so much to your work and your interests and everything. Why should someone come visit the O?
Because it is distinctly Scottish with the species that we have, it is wild, it's beautiful. There are, I think, a lot of the top Scottish species of wildlife here, you know, the red deer, the eagles, otters, hen harriers, peregrines. There's stuff here for everybody, I think. It's very
Yeah.
scenic, looks good on Instagram if you take photos. Got feral goats, they're a crowd pleaser.
Something for everyone.
Something for everybody,
If you have to go.
yeah. And then, I mean, if people are here and people do see us, feel free to stop me for a chat. But whatever.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's been great to be on. Thanks
appreciate it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And here's your nature notes for the week. This week, why not take a bit of time to appreciate some of our urban wildlife? In particular, some of the bird life which spends time passing through our busy residential and commercial zones in search of extra wintry food opportunities. During the end of Jan, and particularly in winters such as the one we're having, keep your eyes peeled for black redstar. These primarily winter visitors, whilst a rare breeder to urban areas, will often be seen in ones or twos hanging around busy places this time of year. Look for their classic flitting, diving, darting behaviour between perching and flycatching, and they'll often perch high up on building tops, churches, fences, etc. The urban life to keep an eye out for at the end of January include the urban classic, the peregrine. Any city river birds, the likes of goosander, grey wagtail, dipper, or even if it's an extra sunny, mild February day, perhaps an early hibernating butterfly briefly appearing to bask on a wall, perhaps a peacock or a tortoiseshell. However, your target species to look out for this week is the elusive and enigmatic Bohemian waxwing. These scarce eruptive winter passage birds are lingering in a few groups across various urban zones in the UK right now, so now might be the time to catch one before spring. Keep eyes peeled on any remaining berry bushes, such as rowans, white beams, crab apples, maybe even apple trees and hawthorns. A classic city centre and suburban visitor and can be very confiding if found. Look for them perched high on a roadside tree as they wait, either in singles or in flocks, to descend down to pavement berry trees for food. So, good luck guys. Hope you catch up with some waxies. I hope you have a great week. And thanks for listening to Wilder Skies.